Welcome to the December 12th, 2014 Drupalize Me podcast. Drupalize Me. I'm your hostess, Amber Matz, and today I have with me Matthew Tift, who is a senior developer at Lullabot. He's also a Minnetonka parent, Minnetonka graduate, mentor for the Tonka Coder Dojo, and a Minnewashta Coding Club. And the Minnewashta Coding Club. I hope I said that right. And member of the Tonka Code Design Team. And so pretty much very much involved with coding and the community and the schools. And I also have with me Eric Schneider, the assistant superintendent for instruction at the Minnetonka Public Schools. So hello to you both.
Hi, Amber.
Hey, Amber.
So today we're going to talk about the successes and challenges of how you guys and the parents and school officials that you worked with work together to get coding into the curriculum at Minnetonka schools. So let's dive into the discussion. So Eric, do public schools traditionally offer computer-related classes? I mean, I remember taking a computer literacy class in high school, but that seemed like that was about it. So today, like, what kind of computer-related classes are offered traditionally in schools? What does that usually look like?
Yeah, sure. And first of all, Amber, thanks so much for having me, and I appreciate the opportunity here to share a little bit of our story. And I'll just say very quickly here that Matthew has been extremely instrumental in supporting us as we've designed this curriculum. So it's great to be able to share this opportunity with Matthew. To answer the question about computer-related classes, I think, oftentimes the opportunities for students are really primarily at the high school level. There haven't been historically a lot of computer science elective courses available at the middle schools, and certainly not at the elementary level. It's really at the high school where you start to see introduction to computer science or those kinds of courses. There's, mm-hmm. there's an AP computer science course that some school districts offer, but it's really hit and miss, and it's very difficult to find really highly qualified teachers to teach those courses.
Right.
They tend to be electives that do not always fill out a complete teaching assignment. So you're typically looking for a math teacher who also has computer science skills.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not something you find in every district, and it's more what I would call an elective opportunity for students. So some kids will get it, but the majority of kids will not.
And I imagine it probably targets kids that are already interested in computers, and maybe doesn't do much to get kids interested in what they could do.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And that's why with our work, we really wanted to design a K-12 computer programming or computer science pathway so that we could really engage kids at the elementary level, starting in kindergarten, and really show what's possible and show some of the interesting pathways that exist inside of computer science, and see if we couldn't engage more students and populate more of those elective courses at the high school level, and really to see if we couldn't integrate some of this learning into our core content. We definitely anticipate our math and science, if not our English and social studies content areas, benefiting from this work.
Absolutely. That's great. So how did your school district, the Minnetonka School District, identify coding in schools as something they should be concerned about and as a priority?
Well, it's a great story, and I'll try to keep it brief. But in Minnetonka, we have a culture of innovation that's really driven by an open innovation platform. So we invite teachers to submit ideas, what we could be doing for students that we're not currently doing, and we kind of run an event where ideas compete against other ideas, and we see what rises to the top. We use a software product called Spigot from a company called MindJet out of San Francisco, and it's really quite a fascinating process. But 2 years ago, we had three top ideas out of 180, you know, so we get a pretty high volume of traffic during the event. But one of the top three ideas was K-12 computer programming. So someone had submitted this idea. They said they had seen how in some Eastern European countries and Asian countries that this is done. Why wouldn't we try it? And so I have to admit that a couple of years ago, I was doubtful that we had the capacity to do this. But what really was fascinating to me was we take these top ideas and we run them through a parent and student focus groups. And the focus groups were off the charts in support of this idea. And so I really sort of braced myself and dove into the deep end of the pool. And fortunately, that's when we reached out to parents and found parents like Matthew who said, hey, not only is this a great idea, but I'm willing to help. And so we pulled together a design team that consisted primarily of parents and a handful of teachers. And, you know, here we are a year later, and we've fully launched our K-5 initiative, and we'll bring our 6-12 online next year, as well as advance our K-5 to a sort of a 2.0 version. And it's really been a very exciting journey. So I hope that wasn't too long of a story, but it's been a lot of fun.
That's great. That's wonderful. So Matthew, as from your perspective as a parent, how did you get involved with this process?
Sure, that's a good question. And, you know, as a parent with two kids in elementary school, my oldest right now is in fifth grade, I've always kind of looked for ways to get involved with their education wherever I can. And traditionally, that's been by attending the class parties or, you know, going to the parent-teacher conferences, I have a background in music as well, so I help, you know, the orchestra instructor tune hundreds of string instruments before concerts, which is kind of a fun thing to do. But when I got this announcement talking about coming in to talk about coding in the curriculum, that just seemed, you know, really cool. That seemed something that, unlike maybe some of the other volunteer opportunities, that I was very excited to try and come in and do this. So I wanted to say, you know, right off the bat that I think what Eric has done has been awesome, because he's had these focus groups and he just said, anybody who has ideas about this, come in. And then that led to this committee to try and design a curriculum. And that too, he opened up to everyone. And so there were parents, there were people from the business community, there were teachers, there were media specialists and principals, and we all got in a room in a pretty big group of people, and we just talked about what would it look like to have coding in the curriculum at Minnetonka. And then, you know, in addition to that, his charge to us, I think, was talking about, you know, starting at kindergarten through K-12 and then having this as a curricular, a co-curricular, and extracurricular. So it's, you know, maybe during school, before school, or actually part of the classes. I just thought that approach to that was a fantastic way. And so the way I got involved then was initially, and this is to answer your original question, was because of this announcement to say, come in and tell us about what you think about coding in the school. So I showed up, and that's when I first met Eric.
That's great. So Eric, is it true that Minnetonka is the only school district in the state that has added coding into its curriculum, or were you able to look to other school districts in your state for some guidance?
Well, that's interesting. That news article came out a month or so ago, and I know there were other districts that said, well, wait a minute, we've got some computer programming. we obviously didn't write the article, I don't think we misinformed them. But, you know, there is nobody that's doing it the way we're doing it, which is all students are engaged in this. It's a part of the required core curriculum.
Right.
And so I think that really distinguishes us from other school districts. And I can say that with a real genuine belief, because you know, we trained 350 elementary teachers in August, and I was at every training. And in fact, I personally trained the kindergarten teachers. Mm-hmm. And you know, people kept saying, how can kindergartners be engaged in this? And, you know, I can say with absolute certainty that they are extremely engaged in this. And we found an entry point that was developmentally appropriate for kindergartners. It's a product called a BeeBot, and you can find them on the internet, but it's a great entry point for kindergartners. I mean, we really, you know, with the help of the parents, and I have to say Matthew was awesome. And, you know, there was a lot of different opinions, but, you know, I really appreciated the parents who kind of stuck with us and believed in us and stayed kind of calm and patient because, you know, when you're training 350 elementary teachers in an area in which they have very little, if any, experience, it's scary. And so, you know, yeah. I really had to remind people that, you know, we're going to push people way outside of their comfort zone here, and we have to be respectful when we do that. And so we really held the hands of teachers. We hired a one site contact in every building to be our sort of our ambassador, and you know, we developed a pretty, you know, complex approach to training. And even today, you know, we've got almost every student and every teacher engaged now. But I know there are a few teachers out there who are still struggling. And, you know, we are very gentle with those folks, and we hold their hands, and we, you know, assign them a buddy teacher. I mean, we do a lot of things to help them through that transition. But you know, as far as are we the only school district? No. I mean, there are other school districts that are teaching computer programming, but I am not aware of another school district in Minnesota that is doing it the way we are, where every single student is going to be engaged at a high level. Now, I would say this, and I said this to someone when they asked after the article came out, if there is a district, I'd like to know who they are, because we'd like to partner with them. I mean, this isn't a competition. This right. We want everybody to be doing this. We think it's extremely valuable for kids. And, you know, we are hungry for partner districts to do this work with us. So we're very open.
So talk to me a little bit about just an example of how this works for kindergartners, for example. So you mentioned the BeeBot. So I saw a video, but our listeners may have not seen the video. What's the BeeBot, and what does the activity look like for those kids?
Well, the company is out of Massachusetts. It's called Terrapin, and they've got several products. But the BeeBot just struck us as very applicable to a kindergarten environment. It's a manipulative. It's a little robot, and it's got four directional buttons on the top, and so what Terrapin has created are some what they call curriculum maps. So they're essentially little rugs that that you steer the BeeBot. You know, you have to program the sequence of moves. And so what students do is, in little teams, they have to figure out where they want to move the BeeBot, and they program it with the buttons that are on the top of the little robot. It's a adorable little robot. It looks like a bumblebee. Mm-hmm. That's the name, BeeBot. And kids love it. And the teachers found it to be very a very easy entry point. There's also an app for the iPad that replicates the manipulative environment. So, you know, they could start on the iPad and then introduce the robots. You know, there are a couple of different ways to do that. But the teachers found the BeeBots to be a perfect entry point. And, you know, we bought the curriculum rugs for the classrooms, and so, you know, we did the training, and we asked them to have four different lessons during the school year, and so the expectation was reasonable. You know, mm-hmm. We didn't want to overplay our hand, and we knew that if we kept the expectation reasonable, that would invite more involvement. And, you know, right now we're seeing much higher levels of engagement than what we ever asked for, because the expectation was reasonable, and the lessons that we gave them were really practical.
So when we say coding in schools, you're really talking about problem solving, and the interface that these kids have. It's not like they're typing out lines of code. They have a graphical interface, and they're basically saying, hey, BeeBot, you need to go this way and then this way and then do this. And so either Matthew or Eric, what do you see as the value of teaching that to kids at such a young age? And I mean, they're not learning to program in a certain language, but what skills do you think that they're really taking away from activities such as these?
I think I could answer that because I volunteered for the Hour of Code last year. It was almost exactly a year ago because there's a national initiative to do this. And Minnetonka participated last year. And I volunteered at various levels at kindergartners, third grade, fifth grade. And my day job is coding. So
right.
There was part of me that was thinking, what the heck are we going to do? You know, are we going to teach these kids how to use Vim? Or are we going to use Emacs? You know, and that's how I might have solved the problem. But this is part of the brilliance of having lots of different people that are designing this, because the teachers have a much better understanding of what the kids are going to find excited. So the day that I went in to help the kindergartners learn how to code, I was you know, really wondering, how's this going to look? But when we started doing the activities, it was a program that they did on iPads.
Mm-hmm.
So not what you might think of as coding, but the concepts that they were learning, for example, getting a small cartoon character to go through a maze.
Mm-hmm.
And there were places where they would say, okay, it needs to go forward two steps and then left one. And then they would look for those patterns, forward two steps, left one, forward two steps, left one. And I immediately recognized that as the same kind of thing that I do, writing code at a very different level professionally.
Mm-hmm.
When they started doing this and seeing how it was pretty natural to see the progression from these kindergartners to something slightly more complicated with the fifth graders. Well, they were using Scratch, which added some additional levels of complexity that were appropriate to those kids.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I think that's, you know, potentially a kind of a blocker in the minds of some people, like, why, you know, why coding? And it's really teaching these more abstract concepts and these problem solving skills that they can learn it a certain way at their development level and then grow into that and just get better and better at that as they are growing as persons throughout the school system. And having that consistency, I think it's going to be great for those kids. So that's wonderful.
If I could add just something, Amber, I really agree with what Matthew said there. On the code.org website, there's a video that we often use to share with parents just to give them a sense of why we're doing what we're doing. There's a woman who's interviewed for that video, and she makes a statement that really resonated with our community, because she said, if somebody would have told me when I was young that computer software is really the way to solve problems, really complex problems, to help people, I would have been much more interested,
mm-hmm.
you know, at an earlier age. And so, and we really, really drive that point with our community, with our parents, to say, you know, this exactly, as you said, this is problem solving. This is how we solve problems in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, we really want to engage girls, our young girls in mm-hmm. that conversation, because they've, you know, historically been kind of marginalized or dismissed in that world, and we want to really open that door, really kick it open, and make sure that our young girls see this as a really viable future for them as well.
Yeah, so important, so important. So, Matthew, I know that you are a strong proponent for open source software at Lullabot, especially being a Drupal developer. Did you also push for Minnetonka to use open source software in the coding curriculum, or did that come into play at all?
You bet I did. That's something that I'm very passionate about, and I was very glad to hear that at each opportunity, they tried to find solutions that were open source, because it would fit well both for the teaching as well as for the, you know, the cost and the availability for the students. So that I was pleasantly surprised to see that, you know, they were very sensible about it, in that they Eric, you know, pushed that there were certain places where it made sense to use open source software, but there are other places where it was better for the school to contract with a company that could provide mm-hmm. the software. So, mm-hmm. You know, there, I don't know that there's going to be a lot of open source iPad software. I don't think such a thing would even exist. But the kids, you know, we have to face the facts that, you know, a lot of these kids know how to use iPads. So that, you know, that's one of those instances where I could see that as much as I wanted to push for that, they would have had to either somehow invest a lot of money in a new type of hardware or something like that, or write their own software. So I think they're really being sensible about it. But wherever they can, I think that was definitely something I pushed for, to use free and open source software if possible.
And that's certainly a potential call to action to the open source community to be providing solutions that schools can use, because, yeah, it seems like, well, if it was available and viable, it would be the right choice. But if it's not, it doesn't make sense. If you're spending just as much money or more just to develop it as open source, it's not worth it. So that's great. So Eric, how is coding? I mean, you've talked about a little bit about this at the K-5 level, but how is it integrated into the schools? So you talked about it being something that happens in the classroom, but talk to me a little bit more about that. Are there after-school programs? Are there clubs? Is it in the classroom? Like Matthew mentioned, an hour of code. Like, what does this look like?
Well, it's, you know, I kind of think about Jeff Bezos at Amazon. He always talks about this is day one of the internet, right? and I think about, I mean, we're really in day one of computer programming in Minnetonka. It's, you know, we're just at the very initial stage of what's possible. And, you know, right now, I mean, it's pretty exciting because we've got so many teachers engaged and, you know, so many students. You know, we can go into, you know, our dashboards and see the high level of engagement. I've got two kids in the school district, grades 2 and 4, so I can see through their lens, you know, what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a high level of engagement. You know, the lessons that we've built for all grades, K-5, you know, those are all happening. And so, you know, teachers are getting more comfortable and more confident. But to your point about co-curricular and extracurricular, that's where I say we've still got a lot of work to do. We want to create, our goal is to create something very much like the Coder Dojo model,
mm-hmm.
Happening inside of each of our schools. Right now, we launched a Coder Dojo chapter here in Minnetonka this August.
Mm.
And so we've been running every third Thursday Saturday. We have a Coder Dojo event where we open it up to the community to come in, and we've got mentors. Matthew's been a mentor. So it's, you know, we're building that right now. And my vision, or I think all of our vision, is that we would have that kind of an environment at each of our elementary schools, you know, 2 or 3 afternoons every week, where we would have parents serving as mentors coming onto the school, you know, campus at 3 o'clock, and kids would be able to kind of go into their area of interest and, you know, and they would have that really focused experience. Again, there's a difference between a core curriculum where, you know, we want everybody to have this experience, and then the extracurricular where, okay, now go deeper, go further, go into your specific, you know, area where you're really interested. And we want both of those experiences for kids. So, you know, we're still developing the latter, but the first, the core content has really consumed a lot of our human resources right now. We're really focused on making sure the, you know, that infrastructure is really solid.
Awesome. That's great. So that's great to put that focus for the younger students, but I imagine that the older students, like high school students in particular, have probably taken some initiative to start some clubs or after school groups. So what have they been up to? What kind of clubs or extracurricular activities have they started on their own?
Well, we've got a great computer programming club at the high school, and in fact they are running our Coder Dojo chapter.
Oh, great.
That was our agreement initially, was that the student group would sort of run it, and the district would support that. So I'm there, you know, I'm there helping, but, you know, I really point everybody to the student leaders and say they're really in charge here, and they've done some great things. We've got two Technovation teams that are working right now. That's specifically for middle school girls, and so we've got two tech innovation teams operating right now. So there's, I mean, we've got a number of different opportunities that exist at the middle and high school levels as far as clubs. But again, we really think there's a huge potential for growth there. It's just a matter of getting the right people together and giving them the right resources and support.
I think that's great that the students are even required, but encouraged to take leadership there and teach the younger kids. That was something that my high school did. We went as high school students, we went and taught, I think it was HyperCard, if you remember that program, to the elementary schools. And that was such a formative experience for me in getting me into technology. So I think that's a wonderful development opportunity. Not just the technical skills, but the leadership skills that you pick up when you get to do that. So that's wonderful and so important.
I've noticed that it, again, this is sort of the open source spirit, is that there's been a lot of parents that have stepped forward that said, hey, I want to help. And I think it's been great that the district has provided the support for that. Because, for example, there was a Raspberry Pi club. There was another club that was working with Finch robots. Mm-hmm. At the school where my daughters go, there was a coding club. And when the email went out announcing the coding club for Minnewashta Elementary, I think we had it capped at 25 students, and it sold out, or it filled up like within 45 minutes.
Wow!
And then we ended up doubling the size of that group. We said, okay, in addition to computers, let's try and do this with iPads, and we had sort of a 50-person group, I think was the number. And there was still a waiting list. So there was definitely interest. And then I felt it was just, again, a great opportunity, because I was able to go in there with other parents and help and see these kids on a week-to-week basis to see, okay, well, this week we'll follow this Code Academy lesson, and then next week we'll do something slightly more advanced.
Mm-hmm.
Or this week we don't have enough computers, so we're going to do pair programming.
Mm-hmm.
Or we didn't call it that, but that's what we call it at Lullabot when we share a screen. And they're essentially learning, again, not just coding, they're learning collaboration and other skills.
Exactly. So what kind of resources did you guys find helpful that are available to school staff and parents and community members who might want to bring coding into their schools? Did you find organizations or resources that you found helpful as you were going through this process?
Amber, I would say absolutely. And that's the message I would give to other, school districts and folks who are in roles like mine, is that there's an incredible number of resources out there. A lot of people, parents like Matthew, the code.org website is extremely helpful. They spent a lot of time this last summer developing kind of a scope and sequence, which is, those kinds of tools are really helpful to educators, because that's really how we design learning experiences for students. We have a concept map, and the fact that organizations like code.org were creating those for us, and again, that's open source, that's free to everyone. That was really helpful. We've got a lot of local resources here in the Twin Cities, and I would not do it justice to try to list them all, but just in the vein of Coder Dojo, we've got a great community.
Mm-hmm.
That with groups that are very focused on supporting this kind of work. So, I think it's really, in Minnetonka, the secret for our success was just to really have the, sort of have that initial will to say, we want to try this. And, once you sort of raise that flag, people start coming to help. And I just really encourage other school districts to take that step, to engage the community, to try to reach out and see who's available to help. I think they'll be pleasantly surprised.
Matthew, anything you want to add that organizations or resources that you found helpful as you were kind of participating in this process?
Yeah, I would say that I was pleasantly surprised in getting involved with this to see how many people have worked on this problem and have helped to eliminate some of the common problems that we face as software developers on a daily basis. Just that we always talk about the Hello World program to get something installed on the computer and working can sometimes be a big challenge, as you know, as a Drupalize.me trainer. But there are, for example, there are really great resources like Scratch that I mentioned before, where it used to be that when I first played around with that, I think you downloaded it and it was a desktop only application. Well, if they have made it so you can do all of the same functionality, from what I can tell, using, again, open source software, and it's all online. So you can just go to scratch.mit.edu, and these kids don't have to worry about installing anything. They don't have to worry about they don't have to worry about getting it set up on their desktop, because they just have to have a browser.
Right.
And in addition to that, a lot of these websites will have, you know, getting started tutorials. So I know Scratch has one. I know Code Academy does these kinds of things. And it's really helpful as a, you know, as a parent who maybe doesn't want to sit down and do a whole lesson plan, but really wants to help, to say, hey, let's try this. Open up your browser, go through the tutorial. And I've found, like, mentoring at the Tonka Coder Dojo, that that can be an easy way to get students introduced. And then oftentimes, like with Scratch, again, there are lots of other fun things that people have done. And in some, and sometimes the trickiest piece is getting the kids to actually build the things themselves, rather than always just play with other things that kids have built. But there's some great resources out there. So those are a few that I think are very helpful.
That's great. What other types of, or what kind of equipment or devices and technology, besides what we've mentioned already, like Scratch and the BeeBot and the iPads, what are other types of things have you guys introduced that's used in the coding curriculum?
Well, you know, we I would maybe add that, you know, to the conversation we just had there, the App Inventor tool has been, I think, really helpful for our older students. And it's that, to Matthew's point, that Hello World, you know, kind of a first step is just, how do I create an app that then I can you know, sort of access from my smartphone. And so, you know, we've purchased some Nexus tablets that support that kind of work. You know, but really, for the most part, with the curriculum that we've designed, we've really tried to have it not be hardware intensive. You know, because trying to keep our costs reasonable, you know, we really wanted to make sure we were, you know, leveraging what we had in front of us as far as, you know, using our traditional workstations, our computer labs. We've got a certain number of iPads at the elementary. So, you know, the first and second graders use the iPads. So, you know, I think we haven't gone in the direction of investment in hardware. Although I think as we get now to the middle and high schools, that's going to be more of the conversation, because, you know, obviously kids are going to be working at a higher level.
Right. So has adding coding to your curriculum changed the way that you approach other areas of curriculum development in your district?
Well, that's a great point, and it's going to really come to a head in January and February, once we start reconvening our design team and start talking about, okay, how do we go, you know, how do we move this further ahead, and what it's going to involve is integration into other core content. And how do we teach teachers to leverage the skills that these kids are going to bring now to, you know, design, for example, games that teach a math concept, or design some kind of an experience that engages students in some kind of a science area of exploration. So, you know, we really see that, in fact, there's some great tools being developed even in English language arts for that kind of integration. So, but once we get into a conversation like that, again, from an educator perspective, now I, first thing I have to think about is I now have to train all these teachers in this new, in these new, whether it be software or, mm-hmm. or whatnot. So there's a real hurdle there for us, but we're pretty committed to it. And I think, you know, as long as we keep a reasonable expectation out there, you know, we'll continue to have teacher support.
Excellent. Well, it's about time to wrap up. Are there any final words that you guys would like to share about this experience, or any encouragement to any listeners, community members, or teaching staff that might be listening about coding and curriculum in the schools?
You want to go ahead, Matthew?
There's so much I could say, but I think, I've said a lot of it, but I do feel like this spirit of letting people try things, knowing that, this is in some ways, new territory is something that is a great attitude to bring to this kind of thing, because, you know, I think one of my daughter's fourth grade teachers who, you know, she teaches, it's a Spanish immersion school, so she's teaching Spanish during the days. But she just decided, you know, we should do some of these things. We should get involved in the Hour of Code. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, she wasn't a coder herself. That, you know, that wasn't her background. And I've just met a lot of people like that that have said, hey, we can figure this out. And really, you know, if you look at a lot of people that are very successful in programming and coding, they have that same attitude that, you know what, I've never done this before, but I want to try it, and I think it's important, and I can see the benefits of this, and just go and try and do it. So I feel that I am very lucky to be in a district that is, you know, I mean, I'm very pleased at the work Eric has done. I don't want it to sound like I'm sucking up too much, but but I feel lucky to be in a district that understands the importance of that and that is open to trying trying things they haven't done, trying to, as Eric mentioned, you know, maybe this is uncomfortable or this is new, but we'll give it a shot because we think it's important. So I think if other districts take that approach, I'm guessing that there will be other parents like me that will be glad to stand up and participate and share knowledge and, you know, especially help our kids learn new skills.
You know, I think Matthew's point there is spot on, and I'll just take that maybe. And if there, I'm assuming there are other educators that are listening and maybe have an interest in taking this to someone at their district. And you know, one thing that we talk about with our teachers is exactly what Matthew's referring to, that that this is how the world is changing in our profession. You know, there was a day when we could expect teachers to have all the content knowledge that they needed to have to teach students, but the world is changing so quickly now that really isn't possible, and teachers have to start to become comfortable with that discomfort that they don't know everything about what it is that they're teaching. And this we talk about this very directly with teachers to say that this is what it's going to be like more and more as we go forward, and this is good practice. You know, let's practice what it feels like to not be the experts in computer programming, but to really leverage the engagement that we see in front of us with our kids, and partner with other teachers, and hook our classrooms together, and let's explore. You know, with the acceptance that we're not going to know everything we need to know at the beginning. So I just really appreciate Matthew making that point. And it's from an educator perspective, that's terrifying. and goes completely against everything we have done historically. But I think if a school district really wants to be a part of the future and really do what's our obligation, which is prepare kids for that future, we have to start to let go and trust that, you know, we can manage this new kind of environment with the support of parents and with a little help along the way and be successful.
Yeah, that certainly resonates with me. I mean, as a technology trainer, that's learning is the rule, not the exception. You don't go in knowing everything. The pace of change and the just sheer volume of information out there is just too great. So that is a great life skill for teachers and students alike, just to be comfortable with that discomfort of, I don't know what this is yet, but I'm going to go through this process of learning it and teaching it. So that is so important. So I want to thank you both very much for being on the podcast and sharing your very just inspiring story. So I think that's wonderful. And thank you both so much for your time and being a part of this conversation.
Thank you, Amber.
Yeah, thanks, Amber. I've really enjoyed it.
So if you have topics you want to hear about on the Drupalize Me podcast or comments about this podcast, let us know. You can reach us on Twitter at Drupalize Me, on Facebook at facebook.com/Drupalize Me, or on our website at drupalize.me. Check out the show notes and for links to articles and resources that were mentioned in this podcast. And let us know if you have any questions or comments. Until next time.